Tonight, we have a special guest. Sarah Barker is joining us. She is a longtime journalist, and she has established a really great Substack called The Female Category, where she puts her thoughts down. Sarah, if you want to join us on camera now, that would be great. And unmute so we can hear you. Thank you.
Hi.
So this is Sarah Barker. We are excited to partner with Sarah. She's going to be a contributor through our emails, and we'll link to her writing, her stories, and please follow along with her on her Substack. Again, that's The Female Category. So introducing yourself, Sarah, what can you tell us about yourself? What got you started in journalism, and where does your passion for sports come from?
I graduated in journalism, so I had to do it. I had to do it to make that education pay. I have always been active. I kind of was a Title IX, came in with Title IX. I graduated from high school in 1976. So Title IX had started, and I would say my high school, a large suburban Chicago high school, had some sports for women. So I enjoyed that, and I used that, and I have been active my entire life. So I know very much what I was right on that cusp. Women older than me had nothing, you know, very little sports. And then I could see what I had and what women behind me had. So I was right on the cusp of Title IX. So I could really see the difference that it made for girls and women. And it was huge. And I have been active and mostly in running my entire life. And they always say, write about what you know. And so I was like, well, I know about running. So I married a runner. And so I thought, well, I should write about running, which is kind of a niche thing. But I did, and wrote about that freelance for many years. Enjoyed some success, you know, writing for various running magazines, men's and women's sports. But obviously, being a woman, I think I was drawn to women's stories more. When women started to be, you know, in 1984, they just started the women's marathon in the Olympics. So in 1984, and there were women that I knew that were in the first Olympics. So this was within my lifetime. So it was kind of an amazing thing. But I noticed the first time I noticed something off was I started writing about Caster Semenya in 2009, when Caster Semenya first on the scene in 2009, winning a world championship at the 800 meters. And I was like, wow, you know, that didn't even look like that person was trying. And at the time, I also knew of Ross Tucker, who is a sports scientist, South African sports scientist. And I knew he was knowledgeable about doping, and he had written some things about sex differences too. And so I would have back and forth emails about, you know, what's going on here? What is this? And so he very patiently explained differences of sexual development to me. And I could see that in mainstream media, no other writers or editors were bothering to figure this out. And no one was asking questions, and very quickly, and they were writing incorrect things. They were writing blatantly false things. And at the same time, I could not get, I would pitch stories and say, with questioning Caster Semenya, like
two organizations organizations you were writing for, you would pitch them?
Yeah. Or? And I would get blown off, you know, they wouldn't, but yet there were, New York Times was writing stories about the very victim oriented stories about Caster Semenya, not looking female enough, that we were policing women's bodies because, and so Caster Semenya just did not look female enough. So this and at the same time, I knew that this has coming to the fore now. Back in 2009, I knew that Caster Semenya had undergone an IOC, it was then IAAF, but that's the International Governing Body for Track and Field, had done a test, a sex verification test, because there was a lot of controversy about Caster Semenya. So I knew that they knew Caster Semenya's true sex in 2009. And yet they continued to call Caster Semenya she, and continued to allow Caster Semenya to race in the women's category. And I wrap my mind around the fact that the IOC, I thought, oh, I must be missing something. I just don't know. I don't know everything.
So let me ask you, I know that's how we all start off, right? Are we gaslighting ourselves?
I was like, I must be missing something. I just don't know something.
Totally. But so at this same time, I remember when Caster Semenya came on the scene too, and everyone being like, wow. And I remember thinking, huh, this is funny, or this is a little odd, but I didn't really follow it that carefully. Were there other athletes, like the three male athletes in Rio, were those other athletes active back then?
Yeah, Wambui and Nian Samba. In fact, Nian Samba for a while trained with Alberto Salazar's group.
Okay.
An Oregon group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was Alberto Salazar or one of the other Oregon groups. But yeah, so yes, they were active and racing, yeah.
So you're at this time writing for kind of mainstream running outlets,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Okay.
When did you switch over to, or when did you stop writing for them?
I still do some kind of very bland stories about how to fuel, or how to run a faster 5K, or something, you know, it's a totally non-controversial stuff like that. But I used to write, I have written for the New York Times, Outside, Runner's World, Women's Running, Women's Running, for heaven's sakes. And I think what, and I, as the trans thing, trans identified males became more of a thing in maybe 2013 to 15, I started pitching these ideas, and these outlets that I had worked for before, they wouldn't even answer me. And I wrote an article for Women's Running about, I pitched them the idea about, oh, I'm gonna do, when the IOC came out with their 2021 framework.
Oh yeah.
Their new framework. I was gonna do a history kind of, and of their policies, kind of a history, where it started and where we were now. And they were like, oh, okay, cool. And I did an actual history. I did a real history where I told the truth. And they got back to me and said, they couldn't get it where they needed it to be. And they paid me a $50 kill fee.
So do you have an idea? When did we what can we pinpoint in time or approximately, like, when did we decide that journalism was no longer going to ask the difficult questions, was no longer allowed to be open? And I mean, like,
yeah, I would
use, when was that? Because I know,
well,
I mean,
see, I worked, you know, where I worked for a lot, where I got a lot of freedom was I worked for Deadspin, which I don't know if you remember what Deadspin was. It was a lot of like 20 year old dudes and me, like a mother of two, and then some 20-year-old dudes with beanies on, you know, who swore a lot in there, you know. They could, Deadspin was the whole tagline behind Deadspin was like, no BS, or calling, you know.
When was that? What years was that when you were working for Deadspin?
2008 through 2008 through 2015 maybe.
You already noticing in 2008 that the media was shutting you down?
Yeah, the beautiful thing was Deadspin let me do whatever I wanted. Like, I could write about Caster Semenya in, say, with real things. I wrote a collaboration with Ross Tucker. I wrote an article where he and I like worked together and we explained the whole thing with Duty Chand bringing that Court of Arbitration ruling. And Caster Semenya, we explained DSD, the whole thing. And Deadspin would let me write whatever I wanted. But until they hired a trans editor.
Oh, gosh.
It stopped. It ended like overnight. They hired a trans editor. I don't even know who it was, but all of a sudden, I couldn't write it that. I couldn't write on that.
What was the tipping point where you were like, okay, I'm gonna start a Substack on the female? Had you been percolating the idea of starting your own Substack? Like, what got you to the point where you're like, I need to write these articles, I've got to get this down and I wanna do it?
Yeah, I didn't do it until, because I'm kind of technologically not so great, but and when was Substack even around? I don't know.
It's been around for quite a while.
Has it? Oh, dang. Maybe I didn't know about it. But I think I got sick of writing dumb stuff. And I must have gotten the idea, or actually Ambie Burfoot, I kind of talked to Ambie Burfoot a lot. He's the founder of Runner's World. And now he's probably going to get a lot of hate mail, but he actually has some similar views. But
everyone has similar views. Don't I? No one should be getting hate mail.
But anyway, he encouraged me to try Substack. So I think I had just gotten sick of just false articles, my stuff being turned down. And I knew about Ross Tucker, about Emma Hilton, about Kathy Devine. I knew about all those people, and yet they were never used as sources. Yeah. Joanna Harper was used as a source, and I'm like, ah! I'm like, oh my goodness, what? And I kept seeing these headlines that were patently false. I mean, they were just outright false. You know, people being banned, you know, no one has ever been banned.
No, this is amazing. So someone put in here that Substack was founded in 2017. So it is a little more recent. You got in there.
Hey, I feel good about that. I wasn't that ignorant.
But I think, you know, there's legacy media is under threat right now with new media coming on, because it's not reporting the truth anymore.
Well, they're
I hope that you
they've given up journalism. They've given up journalism, and they're ideologically driven. They're a PR arm, you know, they're a public relations arm. And so even the New York Times, the vaunted New York Times, is a public relations arm. And so they're digging their own grave. I mean, they're not doing themselves any favors, I feel like. But
yeah,
so they have not, the New York Times personally has not asked me, so.
Well, before I hop on to more like pertinent modern day questions, like what's going on right now, I want to hear, what are some of the things that you've written about in the female category that people could go check out? Some of your favorite stories? Who have you invited? You've invited George Perry to write in there. Just George, share a little bit about what we find there, what we might.
George Perry has written some good things, and so we kind of got together, and he's written some wonderful pieces for the female category. Also, he actually put me onto the idea of the California Department of Education article, which I wrote. The California Department of Education stopped doing like the president's fitness testing, like the president's physical fitness test. They stopped doing that because this test is scored. The test is made up by Cooper Institute in Texas, that fitness testing place.
Okay.
And they're scored by male and female. These tests are given to kids K through 12, I think.
I've been in my whole life. I remember them. Yeah.
Yes. Shuttle Run, all that.
So they gave that up when? When did that?
They asked Cooper Institute, because there was no non-binary. It was not inclusive of non-binary students.
What year was this?
Oh, 2023.
Oh, that's how recently they stopped doing that? I thought it had stopped long before.
No. It might have been 2022. I'm not looking at my article right now. It might have been 2022, but it was it's recent. And they didn't like the fact that you had to score the children either male or female. There was no non-binary, score. And they asked Cooper Institute to make a non-binary score, and Cooper Institute said, no, not going to do it. But they wouldn't, you know, they would not bow to the, you know, so.
Hang on, let me just clarify. So this is California first pulled that out, right? Is that what you're saying?
They pulled what out?
The Presidential Fitness Award.
Yeah, they stopped doing
it. In 2023 because of non-binary.
It was either 2022 or 23.
That's fine. No, approximate's fine. I had no idea. I thought it had been gone longer. I don't think that any of my kids went through that. And they're from 2000. So that's interesting. You wrote a paper about that, huh?
Yes, the Department of Education released this report, and it was 138 pages explaining why they decided not to do it. And one of the reasons was that it was not inclusive enough. But at the interesting thing was at the end of this 138 page report, they gave the actual quotes from teachers who had administered the test about the challenges the problems that they'd had with non-binary kids. And it was actually quite heartbreaking, because what really came out of that, which I wrote about, was that the California Department of Education was teaching gender ideology as fact.
Mm.
And it came up, and fitness testing is based in reality. And so those came up against each other. And when they were forced to choose reality or gender ideology, they went with gender ideology and stopped doing fitness testing.
Wow.
So they chose.
I'm fascinated. I can't wait to go read that. I haven't read that.
That one got a lot of readers. for some reason, well, the one I recently wrote about, Nikki Hill's got a lot of readers.
Greg is writing in here. He said, you wrote a great takedown of the paper. He says, the garbage paper by Hamilton, where they compare fat, non-athletic.
Yeah.
Fit women.
That was not even me. I try not to do hot takes myself. I try to get these voices of people who actually do know stuff. That's, you know, I don't know anything.
The research into words for people.
Yeah. So I got Tommy Lundberg to critique that Hamilton paper, and he did, bless his heart. And was he isn't snotty about it. He's just like, it's not, it is garbage. I mean, he didn't say that. He's so diplomatic. But
not scientific, I'm sure.
Yeah, and so he just explained why this is meaningless. This is a meaningless study, and that was extremely interesting. So that those kinds of things I do like to do, because I prefer having someone who knows something and just, you know, going to the source and getting these voices of people who know something. That, and even my interview that I just did recently with the Red Sonja from Toronto, the bike messenger woman who's trying to put on an all women's alley cat race and is running into all kinds of pushback amongst this very hip and progressive, you know, bike messenger crowd.
Mm-hmm. Her story's crazy.
And so
I want to touch on two things real quick. I'm going to change subject because I want to get to we shared in our email introducing you on our distribution list is an article you wrote about how to read a newspaper article. Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about why you felt like that was important and what you hope people got out of it?
Yeah. Yes, there are certain tropes that are used in, you know, in mainstream CNN or New York Times or whatever, that are used over and over again, that if you're aware of them, you can read the article more clearly, like using you know, she for a person who's a trans woman, in, you know, even the word, by using the word trans woman or and she pronouns, you're using the language of gender ideology, and you've lost the meaning. It's like the IOC's recommendation for journalism language, you know, language which you should use. It's not accurate. So you have to change it in your mind, or at least
you have to be able to see through what they're doing.
Painting a trans man as a victim, that they have no other opportunities, when in fact they absolutely do. They absolutely have other opportunities, you know? And
even hearing you talk, I'm so accustomed amongst our people, just to, amongst, you know, how we write, how we advocate, only using sex-based language. It's hard for me even to hear you talking with some of these words, because I'm not sure what you're referring to. So I think I love that you took the time to write that article. I hope people reach it and hand it over to, you know, individuals that are not quite as up to speed on things, because it really does help to, I think, clarify
I would really like to not preach to the choir. That's hard to do, but yeah.
Yeah, it is. Okay, and then you invited George to write about the IOC. Do you want to just share a little bit about his article? Because that's very relevant to where we're headed next.
Right, yes. The IOC, I believe it's the first time ever, issued a guidance for journalists, what kind of language to use in talking about this Olympics, particularly about sex and gender. And they actually would like to remove the word sex, because sex is male or it's very clear. And they would like, their goal is to not have you identify, not be able to identify the sex of an athlete. That is the goal. So they would say, they actually said for the first time ever, they tried to tell journalists, don't use words like male born, or female born, because then that indicates what sex they are, but rather trans woman, which is completely unclear. Lots of people don't know what a trans woman is.
I think they even said, if I remember going back through that, they even just said, just refer to the athlete as a woman.
As a woman. As a trans woman or a woman, do not say born male or identifies as a woman. Even identifies as a woman was not good enough. No, they said trans woman or just woman.
Yeah. And I think, but I don't remember, I read that, but I think I recognized in there, correct me if I'm wrong, the words that set me off the first time I kind of figured out that our voices were being silenced. Didn't it say, don't use the word biological?
Yes.
Don't use the word biological. Don't use the word genetic. And right. That is when that was told to me back, right when I figured out that Leah Thomas was going to be racing my daughter and I wasn't supposed to use the word genetic or biological. I was like, what is wrong? But now it's not just, an activist lawyer telling me that. It's the IOC funneling. Right.
I don't believe they've ever done this before. I don't believe they've ever done it, issued something like this before. So yeah, they're coming full force. I mean, this is they're behind this 100%. Like, this is their end game. This is what they want.
Yep, they're 100% in it. Well, I mean, so Sarah, we are so excited to be sharing your work and trying to get it out to more people. Anyone that this or is watching this webinar, please share Sarah's work and Substack for anyone who wants to be more informed, or especially for those who don't in your circles that aren't informed. She would be a fabulous resource for people to get up to speed. So Sarah, just really looking forward to sharing your work.
Thank you. Yeah,
I'm excited. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I kind of want to hear what you have to say coming up.
No, I think we're all excited to talk about the Olympics. So we'll move on to that. Thank you again, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Marcy, do you, here, let's go to, the next one, the next screen. Yeah, so as all of you know, we are dealing with some differences of sexual development at the Olympics this year. And well, the controversies never end. This is not new. We've been dealing with this for the last 8 years in Rio. As everyone recalls, there were the three male athletes that took all the podium spots. We're just going to put a little refresher up on the screen so you guys can remember how much this heartbreak hurts women. Just watch this for 1 minute.
It seems like almost a two-tier event, but you're chasing down somebody like Caster Semenya, who's light years ahead, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to avoid the issue all year, and you can see how emotional it was, between me and Melissa and Joanna at the end, and we know how each other feel, but it's out with our control and pretty much relying on the people at the top sorting it out, and I think the public can see as well, sorry, just how difficult it is with the change of rule, but all we can do is give our best.
That breaks my heart every time I see that. And we had another female athlete in tears just today. So Marcy's going to share with us a little bit about what we're seeing in boxing, and she'll introduce it. Thanks.
I'm sure everyone on this call has seen the reports, the chaos, confusion, the media deception about the story that's going on. But I wanted to just help to clarify to you all what we happen to know about athletes currently competing in the women's category that are male right now during the Olympic Games. So the most top of mind and most outrageous story right now is of the Algerian boxer. This is an athlete that we have been tracking for over a year since these two boxers failed their gender eligibility requirements in the international.
Jump in real quick and just point out, we're speaking about the boxer that is in the pink shirt. The male boxer in the pink shirt is who we're speaking of.
So both of these boxers, the Taiwanese boxer as well, were disqualified from world championships mid-tournament after, I believe it was athletes or coaches started going to the IBA leadership and complaining that they believed these athletes were male. They went through chromosome testing, what the IBA called quote unquote DNA testing, and were confirmed to be XY male athletes. We don't know the details beyond that at this point, but if you're on Twitter, you know that the army is out claiming that these are, again, just like Caster Semenya, female athletes with high testosterone or just plain old regular women. And we know based on their tests last year during the World Championships, that is not the case. The reason why they are eligible to compete in the Olympic Games a year later is because the International Boxing Association has had a fallout with the IOC. It's been a contentious relationship, and there's no longer that connection. So whereas the IOC has offloaded their responsibility to individual international sports body to determine their own rules, they have actually taken back the reins on boxing for the Paris Olympics. Coincidentally, two male athletes are let through. The reason that is just like Ross Tucker said on a great podcast, I'll put in the chat for
everyone
you all.
Can listen to it.
Go listen. He's much more articulate than Kim and I, and much more educated on the nuances, but he explains in detail what we know. I'm sorry, I've even lost my train of thought now, but go and listen to the podcast to hear more details. But hold your ground on Twitter, in the media. Sarah just talked about the outright lies, the deceptive headlines. This is going full force right now, including from the IOC themselves. They have put out a statement today that has clarified that these are quote unquote female athletes. They are trying to discredit the IBA's previous testing when in reality, they actually do not know the sex of these athletes definitively. They are relying on their passports, which in the US, we are able to change. We can take our gender off completely. We can be marked as an X, and we're allowed to switch between male and female with the stroke of a pen on a form. So these are changeable documents in certain countries. In this instance, what we suspect is that these are also DSD athletes who are male with some differences of sex development, where they, in this instance, were assigned their birth sex incorrectly at birth. And the differences of these smaller countries that have limited medical capabilities are much higher, which is why we're seeing smaller, more underdeveloped countries come forth with DSD athletes, where it's much more difficult to make that mistake in country in the Western world. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to add that obviously any information you can give to friends and family, Twitter, social media, when you speak to reporters, reach out to the news, put pressure on politicians in your area. These are male athletes. And a very strong argument to make is women deserve to know at every level if they are going into a fair and safe competition. This is a disaster that has been created. Just, it's huge. And the ramifications trickle all the way down, as we know. But women are looking over their shoulder, wondering if, so they have to accuse. And then someone, obviously, eventually someone is going to be accused of looking like a man or being a man. And then there are men in there. So literally, it's like shifting sand for the women and for anyone on there. This is the intention. It is frustrating to read the reports of the IOC right now saying like, oh, these athletes have been cruelly targeted and it's so terrible what the press is doing to them and they are victims of an international flogging and there's all of this sympathy garnered toward these male athletes. And they're also, the IOC is also dragging the IBA through the mud. Yes, we know the IBA and the IOC, I think there are some political and governance issues that actually may be legitimate, but dragging the IBA through the mud on this issue is not legitimate because the IOC is saying they IBA is wrong to change the rules mid-course or mid-event, you know, in the middle of a season or not go through the governance to change the rules. Everyone, literally all of us, assume that when we hear a woman's category or this is a woman's competition, that the people competing are going to be women. So coaches and athletes finally had the courage to speak up about the competition they were facing. And the IBA listened and did something, checked up on it, found there was a problem and fixed it. And the IOC is gaslighting the women, the athletes, the coaches, everyone involved, and saying there was no problem and you didn't have a problem before. It's the same arguments of silencing voices. So I wanted to put that out there. Get everyone speaking loudly about this. Get everyone demanding. We need to know if people are competing in the correct category. We need to know people's sex. It is not okay to hide that. And in this case, it is life-threatening. Go ahead, Marcy. Sorry.
I'm seeing a couple questions. Has anyone in the boxing world spoken to the claims from the IOC that the IBA is corrupt? Is it the IOC just not happy with their thoughts on gender ideology? We know that there were some cultural issues within IBA based on reports. I don't know the details of what those were. There's also some financial disputes going on. It has been a long-term ongoing contentious relationship for not just the span of these few months, but several years. So I can't speak to all of the claims, but it is telling at this point that the IOC is doubling down on their claim that these are female athletes and trying to disparage the IBA as much as possible to really offset the responsibility that they have on their shoulders to create more confusion among the public and to not correctly identify the sex of their athletes, not just in boxing, but in soccer, potentially volleyball as well, in this Olympic Games. So, essentially, I just want to give you all the confidence. If for those of us on the call here, some really recognizable names, I know you understand that these are male athletes, but I'm still getting texts and calls from athletes and people being asked in the media, are we sure? Are we sure? These have been verified XY male athletes. So these boxers in particular, yes. As far as the soccer players go, what is interesting is that these two athletes from Zambia are now the top two highest earning professional women's soccer players of all time now. They have also both failed gender eligibility criteria for African Cups in the past. We know more details about Banda on the right, who actually has been noted to have a DSD AIS, which only afflicts male athletes, XY as well. So this is not new, as we've seen with the Rio podium of all gold, silver, and bronze. This is continuing now. And from everything we can tell by the IOC's response, they are absolutely doubling down on mass confusion, and they are dedicated and devoted to putting female athletes in harm's way to avoid responsibility and to avoid doing what's right. So it's our responsibility as spectators and people connected in the sports world to make as big a ruckus as possible. And I think the public is doing that with us. It's so egregious that we're seeing people come out of the woodworks. There are people paying attention now that never would, which is wonderful, but we cannot let up the gas. We have to continue. So, Kim, do you want to tell them about the USOPC letter that we just sent out
But
yesterday?
before we go to that, I'd have to pull it up here. I can get it on my phone. Before I go to that, I want to talk just briefly. If people say, oh, women's sports, this only affects women's sports, I want to make a point. This affects men as well. This affects every sport at the Olympics. We were talking just before this webinar, and Marci was saying that she made a point of saying this affects the integrity of all competition. When you're handing out gold medals, when you're equating the accomplishments of, beating up women in the ring, or of a male athlete that's been on, testosterone suppression because he has male levels of testosterone like he should in order to compete with women, any of these situations where we let male performance advantages into the female category just to appease males, to be nice, to we don't make the rules fair, we don't make the competition fair, we are equating the gold medal, the amount of money associated with the gold medal, the contracts that go to these star athletes, the press time, all this stuff is extremely valuable. So you're equating the accomplishments of someone like Michael Phelps to Caster Semenya. It is an attack on merit across the board. It's an attack on sports. It's an attack on the integrity of all sports. And as soon as the Olympics can be a place where they sanction male violence against women as sport, we lose everything that the public specter of sport is supposed to be. And that is the best of our humanity. What are the highest achievements that men and women can push themselves to? And instead, we are taking it to the lowest possible, behavior associated with humans. So we did write a letter with our entire coalition to the USOPC asking for them to get behind this. I'm going to go ahead and read it. It's rather long. Cut me off, Marci, if it's too long.
I was just going to link it to them, but tell them about
Okay.
it. Like, who did we send it to,
That's a
and
good
what are
idea.
we
Okay.
asking?
Let me read the first paragraph then. And then what we're asking, you'll see, we're asking for the USOPC to condemn the IOC for allowing these male athletes to compete. We're asking for the full force of everything they've got, diplomatic, financial, just public condemnation of what's going on in women's sports. And then we are asking for hearings and testimonies before Congress to say what's going on. Why aren't we as a country, as a leading country in the world of sports, doing anything to prevent this, to stop it? And then hopefully holding people accountable for what they haven't had the courage to do. So the Olympic and Paralympic movement is at a crossroads, and the time for silence has passed. And so then we talk about today, a man will fight a woman in a boxing ring at the Paris Olympic Games. And again, on the following day, on the largest stage in the world at an event that should symbolize the best of humanity, male violence against women will become a sport. Skipping a few sentences, this will provoke shock and outrage in every decent man and woman, but shock and outrage from the public at large will not be sufficient to stop the normalization and mainstreaming of violence against women. U.S. female athletes and women of the world and all who care about fairness and integrity in sport need you to immediately stand up against the International Olympic Committee's sanctioned abuse of women. Ending this barbaric practice will require every Olympic leader to stand up and be counted on a pivotal question for both sport and civilization. This is our big question. Will you allow male violence against women to be mainstreamed, sanctioned, and authorized? Oops, what happened? Sorry. Will you allow male violence against women to be mainstreamed, sanctioned, and authorized as entertainment and sport? And demanding that they be able to have an emphatic no and back that up with action, or they don't belong in any kind of leadership position. So please go ahead and read the letter that we sent out. We are actively fighting against this as much as we can. Again, like Marcy said, it's going to take every voice.
It can also be a template for your own networks if you're involved in boxing or a sport close to you. Like, please copy, share, paste whatever you can to draw from letters and documents like this. I know, Nina, you put in the mailing address to the special rapporteur at the UN on violence against women and girls. Yes, we are in communication with Reem Al-Salam. She is a great advocate for women and girls. And all of these people in policy-making decisions, in policy-making positions, should hear from all of us. And so the more letters and touch points that we can make within our state, I mean, we haven't even touched on Title IX new regs going into effect today. But our lawmakers, policymakers, they're awake. I was contacted by 3 different lawmakers in my state of Nevada today, ready to act. As devastating as this incident is to watch, and many of us were in tears today watching the video, it has opened the eyes of many people who were not paying attention. And so this is the time to strike when the iron's hot, to get your letters, make your phone calls, and get people actually activated on doing something about this right now.
That's pretty funny. I haven't even told you this, Marcy, but my mom got a text message from her neighbor today with a picture of what happened, saying, "Isn't your daughter supposed to have been fixing this?
Why didn't she fix this?"
We're trying.
people who have not been paying attention are all of a sudden paying attention. And, you know, we've got Sarah on here to talk to you about why the media is so captured. Your voice in your community and talking to everyone is so important to set the record straight. This has to stop. We've got to lose our fear. I do want to, can we talk about what's happened on Title IX real quick, since it came up in the chat? So yes. Go ahead, Marcy. Why don't you share?
I'm sorry, I was just writing into the chat. Okay. I'm going to let you go ahead, but I'm adding one more link in to another counter media guide that we have put out with ICFS. They are our international consortium of women's groups around the world, just like ICONS representing the US, all across the globe, who also work together. We partner with closely on projects, and we put out a counter media guide to the IOC's outrageous linguistic gymnastics guide. It's very quick read, but if this is helpful to you as well, there's a press release and a downloadable PDF for you on this as well.
Okay, go ahead. Title IX, real quick. All of the, like right now, there is a nationwide injunction, I believe, preventing the Title IX, the effects of the Title IX rewrite from going into action. So that is still being reviewed. It's not dead. That's still being reviewed in the court system. It should ultimately go up to the Supreme Court. I think they've already asked for that, but it is presently stopped across every state from going into effect.
It's in question.
Right. That does not mean that the blue states that have written their own laws that incorporate gender identity as a protected characteristic can't do their own thing. I mean, you ultimately should be able to sue under federal law, but we're going to get clarification on this in the coming years. Do you want to add anything to that, Marcy?
I would just say the message, I did an interview earlier this morning, and the message I was trying to convey was that we're in a state of, again, total chaos across the country. Schools don't know, do I need to abide by this? Do I not? Depending on what state you're in, you may not. My message is do not comply. It doesn't matter what state you're in. If you're a coach, a teacher, a principal of a school, do not comply with these regs. They're illegal, unconstitutional. Of course, these will be stricken down because it cannot be left to stand that schools are mandated with state-sanctioned discrimination against girls. It can't. So fight wherever you are. I see Julie is here. She's activated in California. If she could do it in San Francisco, we all can do it. So do not comply and spread the word. Do not let schools be bullied. We need to do what's right. A lot of atrocities had happened because people have excused that they're following the rules. This is what's happening in the IOC. And that's just not good enough. We have to do what's right now.
Okay. Last thing I want to add before we just go to questions or any comments, I want to mention these are the Worldwide Olympic Partners. I'm putting them in the chat, and they're posted up on Twitter too. I think we need to come up with some kind of way to push back on these companies that's, you know, targeted, not just letters, but we've got to come up with a way to tell these people we are not okay with them supporting an Olympic movement that defends the abuse of women like this. If you have any brilliant ideas or strategies, or you know anyone that can help us come up with one, would you please reach out to Marcy or myself? We would really like to entertain that and figure out how we can get people on board. So what have we got going on in the chat? Any questions?
Writing. Yeah, Kim, do you want this one? Has NCAA responded to our lawsuit? If not, what now?
Okay, so yes, the NCAA did respond in a typical lawsuit fashion. They responded with motions to dismiss to the judge. That's what almost always happens in a lawsuit. You file a lawsuit against someone, and then the lawyers of the people that have the lawsuit filed against them will say, this is a bogus lawsuit. You need to just toss it off the table and don't consider it. So they wrote that, and then we had a chance to respond as well. It's not dismissed. And then we should hear back so you file a complaint. There's a motion to dismiss from the NCAA, and then we file an amended complaint, and then there will be another response from the NCAA. And then I believe it goes to the judge, and we should get some decisions on at least some elements of the lawsuit. Things look pretty good in the 11th Circuit still. The 11th Circuit is the circuit that granted the nationwide injunction for one of the lawsuits against Title IX. So that bodes well, but I don't have anything exciting.
We do have some exciting news related to that. We have added additional plaintiffs. So there's a few new women that we need to get up on our website, if they're not up yet, to introduce you to. One of the volleyball players is in my home state, a personal friend of mine. who has been revealed, Nenea Merriman, also Grace County in North Carolina. She swam at the championships against Leah Thomas from UNC. Also Ellis Fox from Texas A&M is a great advocate. She's a freshman, I think going to be a sophomore. So young and feisty, wonderful advocate for women's sports. So we have a few new names on there. We are still open to growing the list. If you have contacts of any collegiate athletes who are particularly going to face one of the many male athletes in the NCAA, please reach out to us, reach out to them. If there's any interest at all, we're asking for a conversation. That's it.
And as always, I want to put out a plug. If any of you know people who are interested in helping to financially support the lawsuit, it is expensive. We have amazing lawyers working on it. We're super excited and proud of what they've been able to do. But anyone who knows anyone that would be interested in helping fund it or offering financial support for that to give these help us to provide an opportunity for these women to have their day in court and hold the NCAA accountable, please consider connecting us or helping out.
Let's funnel all of these sponsorship money into an NCAA lawsuit fund. Coca-Cola, I could save a lot of money this year. Airbnb, same thing. Samsung, yes. So yeah. Let's add them to the list.
Has ICONS reached out to high-profile female U.S. Olympians to comment on support of women and girls in sport vis-a-vis this boxing debacle? Do you want to comment on that?
We are in private conversation with many. We encourage athletes to speak out all the time, but we do not pressure them to do that. So we're keeping the encouragement going. Incidents like this, I have seen new voices speak out on their social media platforms and in the news that I haven't seen before. So every outrageous instance that happens, more and more come out, and we're happy to have them and happy to see it.
Someone just said I have some fencing. Yeah, so reach out. So I am going on vacation next week. We have school year kicking off here. August is going to be a busy month. When the school year gets back underway, we are absolutely getting going on organizing our new communities that are going to be expanding after this. We have a bunch of great links into fencing and would love more. That's in the works. Fencing is getting itself organized. So Marcy just put her email in there if you would connect them. Okay, what did I miss? Bud Light was an interesting confession as to why men who self-ID.
What should we do about LA games in 2028? I like where your head's at, Julie. It's going to be a big opportunity. I hope that we're done with this madness by 2028. But from where the IOC stands today, I don't know. I think we may have to organize something for LA games. But let's get through Paris, and then we will regroup and talk about the next event.
I'm really in charge of organizing.
Yeah, Julie's in charge from California. Yeah. All right.
Did we miss anything? I'm scrolling back through.
Yeah.
There's, I wish that I could say that the lawsuit was slower going. The one thing faster going, it is slow going. The one thing I want to add is that we do expect to have something in August or September. So we should have an exciting update. And our September webinar will probably be a recap of everything that's gone on at the Olympics, where we are, what the responses have been, and what's unfolding. So come and talk to us next month. Thank you, Sarah. Yes, thank you for joining us, Sarah.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. It was so interesting. Yeah, I am too, like every day wondering what is going on? What world have I woken up in? It's so weird.
Mind boggling.
Well, keep us updated on the female category for sure. We'll keep.
I absolutely will. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for, I'm looking forward to this partnership. Anything I can do, I'm I'm about trying to get the word out.
Fantastic.
Appreciate you.
All right, everyone. Go to work. And enjoy the
Start
game.
Start writing.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Take care. See you in September.
Bye.